You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate. And we're talking today with Joe Veal, a former member of the Black Panther Party back when it was a revolutionary party, and currently a member of the Revolutionary Communist Party and a supporter of Bob Avakian. We are also talking with Lucha, and Lucha is also a revolutionary involved with the Revolutionary Communist Party. And we're talking about what happened to the Panthers and what's needed today.
So we always say to the Black Panther Party that they can do the thing they want to us. We might not be back. I might be in jail. I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you can remember I said with the last words on my lips that I am a revolutionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletarian. I am the people. I'm not the pig. You've got to make a distinction. And the people are going to have to attack the pigs. The people are going to have to stand up against the pigs. That's what the Panthers are doing. That's what the Panthers are doing all over the world.
This is the 50th anniversary of the murder and assassination of Fred Hampton, the leader of the Chicago branch of the Black Panther Party by the FBI Chicago Police. At 4:45 a.m. on December 4th, 1969, a special operations team of 14 Chicago cops stormed into the apartment of Fred Hampton, the 21-year-old chairman of the Illinois Black Panther Party. They were being directed by Cook County Prosecutor Edward Hanrahan, and acting in close coordination with the FBI counterintelligence program, COINTELPRO. Armed with shotguns, handguns, and a .45 caliber machine gun, and guided by a floor plan of the apartment provided by an informant, the police shot anyone they saw and sprayed the apartment with machine gun fire. Moving to the back of the apartment, they entered Fred Hampton's bedroom. Hampton, already wounded, was still in bed, having been drugged earlier by the FBI's informant. Alongside him was Deborah Johnson, his girlfriend, who was 8.5 months pregnant with their child. As they lay there, the cops stood over Hampton and put two bullets in his brain. One cop reportedly said, "He's good and dead now." The shooting continued. By the time they were done, they had also killed 22-year-old Mark Clark and critically injured four other Panthers, most of whom were asleep when the police entered the apartment. After carrying out this massacre, the cops proceeded to abuse the seven surviving occupants and arrest them on major felony charges. J. Edgar Hoover, he was in charge of things on the national scale at that point, and the FBI played the main role in targeting the Chicago Panthers and Fred Hampton in particular. All of the things that inspired so many people to love Chairman Fred aroused the hatred of the FBI and the other defenders of this system, who feared the potential for a revolutionary force that could seriously challenge their rule during this period of tremendous social upheaval in the U.S. and revolutionary struggles around the world. Joining us to talk about this today are two people that I really enjoy talking with, basically who have a lot to say about this. Joe Veal, and Joe is...
I'm a follower of Bob Avakian. I'm a member of the Revolutionary Communist Party. I'm a former member of the Black Panther Party. I was in the Black Panther Party 50 years ago.
And also joining us is Lucha. Lucha, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Michael?
I'm pretty good. It's good to talk to you. There's a whole hell of a lot to talk about, and I'm going to start with you first, Joe. For a lot of people, it's been 50 years since Fred Hampton was murdered. You know, for a lot of people that are existing in the world today that are out maybe getting active in some way, or people that are just like walking around and, you know, they don't know much about Fred Hampton. They don't know about what happened to him. They don't know about what it's, you know, signified, why it was important that people understood the truth about what happened to Fred Hampton. People heard what I read in the opening, but I wanted to know if you think there's more that you want to say about the murder of Fred Hampton and Fred Hampton himself.
Well, you know, Fred was a revolutionary leader. You know, he's a leader like what you said, you know, the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party. And that's what Fred had like said. When I leave here, you can remember I said with the last words on my lips, I am a revolutionary and I love the people and I get high off the people. I get high off of revolution. And Fred, he led people to live, to fight, and to die for revolution, for overthrowing the system and how we understood it like back then and stuff, and to bring something different and better into being and stuff. And he gave his life to that. He led the people to do that, the people to, you know, to get out of just living and giving their life for just the BS, you know, that happens, you know, like to people on the streets or just happens to the normal workings of this system, to live and to die for something else, for something liberating. People had a lot of love for Fred because of that, you know. Fred used to say,
I'm all the way for proletarian revolution. I'm not going to die in a plane crash. I'm not going to die stepping on a piece of ice. I'm going to live and die in an international proletarian revolution. And that was some of the influence, like in the Panthers. Panthers, the Panther Party itself was a revolutionary party, was revolutionary national. But Panthers had communist influence within there. And you can see that in somebody like Fred Hampton. And that's when he was talking about the proletarian, international proletarian revolution, the influence of communism on the Panther, the influence of communism on Fred. Now, the Panthers never did make that leap to become a communist and scientific revolutionary organization. And I don't know where Fred would have ended up if Fred would have been able to live. He would have been here like with us like now and representing and advocating and fighting for this here like now. But this is what the trajectory of his life at the time that he was cut down so coldly and brutally by the pigs that run this system.
What I wanted to ask you is this. Why, well, you know, even as you're starting to talk about this, I know I was talking to some people who they had no idea why Fred Hampton would have been so savagely murdered in the way that he was, very publicly, very coordinated in terms of what's going to go on around this, you know, and
right.
And I'd like to talk about that a little bit, and then we'll move into another subject that is also I really want to dig into, but let's talk about why they went after him the way they did. This was a targeted assassination, no question about it. It wasn't like, you know, somebody just sort of decided, okay, we think we see guys with guns in there or something, right? It was actually a long planned out and targeted assassination. Let's talk about that.
Right. Like, when they were trying to, you know, the FBI, the pigs, the power structure, they were trying to prevent revolution and revolutionary leaders from emerging, and they feared that revolutionary leaders emerging from the oppressed that could unite people, that could unite different people, especially amongst, like, black people. And, you know, for instance, like, Fred, the time that he was cut down, he was trying to bring people out of the gangs into the revolution. They started like living for revolution. And the FBI would send letters to Jeff Fort, who was the leader of the Black Peace Phone Nation here in Chicago. They would send letters and sign Fred Hampton's name on it, threatening Jeff Fort's life. And they would do the same thing to Fred and sign in Jeff Fort's name to it, the divide and conquer, trying to, you know, get them to kill like one another and stuff. And why? Because amongst the oppressed, and this is one of the, you know, was the things that the Panthers were like doing, like overall amongst, you know, when people who are at the bottom of this society and stuff started to stand up for revolution, for liberation, fighting for it, it become like political, it started to have an impact on a lot of people. It started to impact not only just black people, but people of other nationalities. It started to have an influence amongst Puerto Ricans and the Young Lawyers Party. It started having influence amongst white, amongst the students. Bob Avakian, the leader of the revolution today, was first introduced to revolution by the Black Panther Party. So it was a whole generation of people because of the activity of people like Fred and the Black Panther Party and this revolutionary movement that they were at the leading edge of was having impact, and it was, you know, building up unity amongst people across different racial barriers as well as against, you know, people growing up from, you know, out of different class and social experiences and everything. So this is something that was very threatening to the powers that be. And that's always, especially when it comes from, you know, that those who they despise and who they torment the most at the bottom. You know, Fred could have did something else, like, with his life. And he chose to, like, what he said, to live and die for revolution. Fred comes from, like, the middle class, and he was very closely, you know, had close connections with people, again, on the bottom there in the inner cities. And he was bringing them and organizing them into the revolutionary movement that existed, like, at that time. At that time, we wasn't, you know, we didn't understand, like, things. Like, we wasn't scientific in our approach, like, to revolution and but, you know, it had tremendous impact on the situation at that time, very threatening. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get everything, like, together to take it all the way at that time. But what we have, like, learned from Fred and from that whole experience, that's nothing greater to do than people dedicating their life to revolution. And now we do have a much more scientific understanding and approach to how revolution is possible, how we actually can make revolution. And we got that because of the work that Bob Avakian has done over the years, over the decades, learning not only from that experience, but learning from the experience of revolution actually being made twice with the wretched of the earth, with those who represent the wretched of the earth, and the revolution to put an end to all oppression and exploitation happened twice, but were defeated. Happened first in Russia in 1917, led by Lenin and the Bolsheviks, and later in 1949 by Mao Zedong there in China. And both of them were defeated. They were defeated, but there also was, there were certain, things that we didn't understand. Our leaders didn't understand scientifically or thoroughly that Bob Avakian has went to work and studied and learned from. You know, those revolutions, a little baby. That's how, that's where we are at in this stage of human history. Looking at things strategically, it's like a little baby learning to walk, and those were the first two times. And we fell down and stuff. We made mistakes and we fell, and we learned from that, to how to be stronger so we don't make those same mistakes again, how we can be stronger and go further than we ever have before with this revolution. And that, again, that comes from the work that Bob Avakian has done, looking at that experience and then just looking at the experience of human history overall. So there's a new approach and there's a new communism in the world today, and it comes out of all of that, and it's standing on the shoulders of all of that experience that we come out of. And that, people like Fred, that they contributed to and stuff, So getting back to it, revolution, that's why they killed Fred. People don't understand when people talk about the Panthers and the Freds, and other people know about, people think of the free breakfast program that was doing this, but Panthers was revolutionary. They were out to overthrow the system, lead the masses to overthrow the system. And they talk about black people getting free, but it wasn't just about black people. They were uniting and joining with other people, other nationalities and stuff like this here, as I was saying and stuff. And this was having a powerful impact at that time. They had become very threatening in U.S. society. It was part of the revolutionary upsurges that were happening throughout the world at that time. In China, in the revolutionary struggle, in Vietnam against the U.S., and people had hope. They had hope in revolution, not no pie in the sky, no God, so-called mystical God or whatever some that don't really exist. When I was in the Panthers, every Sunday morning, when I was in the Bay Area, that's why I was in the Panthers, that in the Bay Area. And the national office was there in Berkeley. And every Sunday morning, we would be at the national office. They called those central committee meetings because that's where the national office is at, and usually some top leader or somebody from the central committee was leading those meetings and discussions. There in those meetings, sometimes there would be tapes from prison, from Huey Newton, but we're talking about revolutionary strategy, how we can develop a revolutionary strategy to get the struggle going so we can overthrow this system. It wasn't going to and praying down on our knees and hoping for some so-called afterlife that don't exist, but how we can make a better life right down here, on earth and stuff right now. Mm-hmm. And like I said, then there was a lot of things that we did not understand about how that's not only necessary, but how that's possible, and how that is the only real hope for people is in making revolution. But there's hope because we have a scientific understanding, a scientific method and approach to how to go about and making revolution. Who are the main forces for the revolution? Who has to be united with? Who has to be the backbone forces? What is the strategy for making revolution? What are we going to replace this system with? There's a new constitution for a new socialist republic here in North America that's been authored by Bob Avakian. So all these things that we did not understand back then, that we do understand now, makes revolution even much more, the possibilities for that, to make it even much more stronger and stuff, because we have that scientific understanding and that scientific approach that we need under our, that we have that under our footing that we're standing on and stuff. It's something that we never like had before in this way, like before, mm-hmm. as thoroughly as we have it like now and everything.
Mm-hmm. This is the Michael Slate Show, and I'm Michael Slate. I'm talking today with Joe Veal and Lucha Bright. I'd like to play an excerpt from a speech of Fred Hampton's.
Why do I have a lot of arrests because of harassment? Why is there harassment? Because the people that harass me have set up a problem that made me disagree with them violently, and they set up this problem in order to exploit me and other people like me. And why do they want to get rid of me? Because I'm saying something that might wake up some other exploited people and some other oppressed people, and if all these people ever get together, then these pigs that are exploiting us, we'll be able to run them into the lake. That's why they want to get rid of us. And it's just, it's sort of like a primary thing with me. I'm the first move that they'll make. I'm a part of an organization that will be the first organization they'll move on, because I happen to be a part of an organization, the Black Panther Party, that is the only organization, in fact, that has came out and stood up loud and clear and said that we don't care what anybody says, whether they have guns or not, and badges or 18 uniforms, if whenever they step outside the bounds of legality into the bounds of illegality, then we'll blow their brains out if they're bothering the people. And what makes them mad about that? They're constantly bothering the people. Anybody that's out there for the protection of the people happens to be in direct conflict with them. What makes them mad about it? What makes them mad about it is that they have black people and white poor people and red poor people and Puerto Rican poor people and Latin American Puerto Rican people of poor people of all descents. They have them caught up in movements based on racism when the Black Panther Party stood up and said that we don't care what anybody says. We don't think you fight fire with fire fists. We think you fight fire with water fists. We're going to fight racism, not with racism, but we're going to fight with solidarity. We said we're not going to fight capitalism with black capitalism, but we're going to fight it with socialism. We stood up and said we're not going to fight reactionary pigs and reactionary state attorneys like this and reactionary state attorneys like Hanrahan with any other reactions on our part. We're going to fight their reaction with all of us people to get together and have an international proletarian revolution.
Right on.
That was Fred Hampton, who was murdered 50 years ago on December 4th. So now, let's continue with my interview of Joe Veal and Lucha Bright. Let me move to Lucha for a minute, because you brought up a lot of things that I think actually there'd be things I wanted to talk to her about in addition to that. Now, you're somebody who's coming from a different generation than me and Joe. Basically, I wanted to ask you this, because that was a question I was like just throwing around for a while, and I think it's you know, you think about the Panthers and Fred Hampton in particular. I mean, I remember where I was back east when it happened, and just the kind of turmoil that was let loose and the kind of hatred for the system that was sort of brought together and the kind of people standing up and declaring that they weren't going to do this anymore. But then I kept thinking about, okay, now you're somebody who came into this at a different time, in a whole different time period. And it's true that Fred Hampton and what he did and what he stood for inspired millions of people, but it's a whole different world. The world that you're coming in from, it's a whole different world. And I know somebody that was I was talking to just the other day, and they were listening to me, and I was talking about to them about Fred Hampton and what was going on and all this other stuff. And I was just mainly trying to work my own thoughts out, but then also wanted to hear what they were thinking. And they just said, well, wait a minute now. Where are the Fred Hamptons of today? Let's talk about that.
Well, this is actually a big problem and contradiction that we confront today. There's what is happening to humanity, what is happening to the masses of people is a nightmare and a hell on earth. There's a need for revolution more than ever. You look now at a fascist regime in this country having come to power with Trump and Pence, and all of what that means in terms of all the devastation of what's gone on in the whole history of this country. All the degradation of people, the murders by police of black and brown people, the mass incarceration, the assaults on immigrants, and the wars on the world. Everything that this capitalist imperialist system has generated through its whole history and the whole history of this country, you now have a fascist regime that's pouring gasoline on all of that, including on a burning planet. All the different aspects of the ways in which the system degrades people, the degradation of women, taking away basic rights of LGBT people. This is the world we're in right now that's taking a leap and, you know, on its way to get much, much worse without a major intervention by the masses of people, even immediately to stop that consolidating fascism, but also to get to the roots of the whole thing. Fred Hampton and the Black Panther Party were trying to make a revolution 50 years ago. You know, the revolution that we need today is more than ever needed to uproot this whole system, get rid of it, get humanity free, all of humanity free all over the world, the people in Iran, the people in Yemen, the people in Bangladesh making the clothes that people are wearing right here in this country. So I'm going into all of that because this is the reality we face. We have, on the one hand, like what Joe was talking about, what we have today that kind of changes the game in terms of the ability to make the revolution we need is the new communism that's been developed by Babavakian. And the fact that Babavakian is actually leading today, was influenced by the Panthers, was shaped in large part by what was going on in the 1960s, came out of all of that, but through the decades has never stopped doing the work to understand how to go further in terms of understanding what we are up against and how to fight through it, and even how to lift our sights to the kind of world where we can end all oppression and what that even looks like. So we have this. We have a scientific approach. We have this leadership. But there is not a revolutionary people in this society today, you know, and there's not a revolutionary movements going on around the world. You have the, you know, all this religious fundamentalism all over the world, you know. You have, to the extent that people are starting to stand up and rise up and protest, you know, there's some positive developments in that direction. But there is not all over the world and not in this country a real pull of people that are fighting for the interests of humanity. And there is, in the sense of there's the leadership of Babavakian, there's the Revolutionary Communist Party he leads, and especially right now, there's a tour that I'm part of and Joe's part of that's called the Get Organized for an Actual Revolution Tour that's going around the country taking up that new communism and fighting for this to actually bring forward a movement for revolution right now. But this is what we're fighting for, as you know, in a very small core at this point, really fighting to transform the situation where what's going on among masses of people of all different strata is mainly a lot of, in one form or another, a lot of individualism and a lot of ways people turn inward and are really thinking on the terms of the system. Even very oppressed people are thinking on the terms of the system. They're thinking about, how do I get some respect in this, or how do I get ahead, even doing terrible things to other people in order to get something and get some respect or make some money or be something on the terms of this system, which is a dog-eat-dog system. And it's going on in different forms among all different sections of the people, but it's a very serious problem that we have right now, where this people that need to be making revolution, that need to be the Fred Hamptons of today stepping forward, are in large part not even thinking about anything higher than themselves. I was thinking about the most recent talk from Babavakian called Hope for Humanity on a Scientific Basis. And that's one of the things that he's really going to work on in that talk, is looking at what problem we really face with this and trying to understand it and understand how to go at it and how to transform this. Because the very same people that are caught up in all this me kind of thinking, also in large part, there are the people that are affected by all of this and that really care about, in one form or another, the crimes of the system, what it's doing to people, and yet people don't have any hope that things could be different than the way they are, and the ways in which this system has people just focused on themselves are part of preventing people from having hope that anything could be different, and preventing people from lifting their sights to the interests of humanity and fighting for that, and willing to put their lives on the line to do that. I did want to say, like, that question of what's worth living and dying for, we put out a statement on the 50th anniversary of the murder of Fred Hampton with the question of what's worth living and dying for, because among very oppressed people are proceeding out of what's worth living and dying for and fighting for, and people throwing their lives away doesn't count for changing anything. It keeps all the oppressive situation going. People are just thinking about, how am I going to make some money out of this, you know, or how do I get some respect? And, you know, oftentimes that means taking revenge against other people, getting into a whole even life and culture of just people taking each other out as part of what it means to get some respect. This is all degrading of people's humanity. And yet it's a way that right now people feel like this is where they find their meaning from. And when you look back at Fred Hampton, what you see is somebody who at 21 years old was taken out and murdered. But in that 21 years, you know, of his life, what he was doing at that time, what he was fighting for, was about liberation. And there's no reason why the people who are right now caught up in all this killing each other that's going on, yes, that is going on the streets of Chicago, there's no reason why the people that are caught up in that can't be the new Fred Hampton. Can't be the people that, you know, are lifting their sights to getting humanity free, not just even for themselves, but for all of humanity, for all this, you know, the oppression of people, for the immigrant children that are in concentration camps right now. You know, there's no reason why people that are caught up in, you know, and thinking about things on the terms of this system right now can't become emancipators of humanity. But there's a big fight we have to wage with people to lift their sights to that, and really to challenge people over a life of meaning is a life that's put towards ending this system,
right,
not trying to get a piece of it and trying to become something within it. And we've been out on the streets having that fight with people, and need to do a lot more of that, and are working to bring forward other people too that are part of doing that at the same time.
Let me ask Joe something now. Just following up on that, I mean, this is when I was like getting ready for this interview, and I'm reading about, you know, some of the what Lucha was just talking about the response of people, and there's a certain amount of sort of going along to get along kind of thing, or just trying to survive on whatever basis you can. But I kept thinking about, you know, this actually, what is happening? Mm-hmm. And when you look at this, so we need a revolution, but people are settled into things. How do you break through on that? And I think that's one thing that when I read this stuff and I thought back about it, what I had known about Fred Hampton, when I read stuff in preparing for this, there was a certain amount of not sort of Pollyannish sort of trust in the people, but there was a certain amount of challenging people and what they might have been thinking. But also, he was like, he put things in people's hands and said, look, this is what we need to do. This is where we got to go. And I kept thinking about how, in terms of you and how you're looking at this today, you know, how do you find this thing about actually we need a revolution, but people are settled into the system, and how are we going to break through this? And, you know, what is actually happening on this? Let's talk about, what do you think? What are you learning?
Yeah, well, one of the things we're learning, I mean, if there is a need for a lot of, you know, struggle, like with people, you know, around, you know, what they are like caught up in, you know, how the system, you know, puts them in, you know, and catches them up into these, you know, degrading, you know, dehumanizing like ways and, you know, and things that they do like to each other and stuff like that. And, you know, so we have to struggle with people around that, you know, around like what is in the interest of humanity, that there is another way that the whole society and the whole world can be another way that humanity can like live and stuff, that this here. And what we are about is, you know, a revolution to bring that way into reality. So it's a thing about, you know, like bringing people into the movement of revolution that we're building and stuff. And it's points of attention for the revolution that we base ourselves on, you know, that talks about we base ourselves and strive to represent the highest interests of humanity, revolution and communism. We do not tolerate using the revolution for personal gain. And you got all this, people get, you know, caught up in the thinking, you know, the only way to, you know, live or survive is, you know, somebody like this, me or whatever and stuff. They come to, you know, over on my territory, I got to take them out or whatever and stuff like this here. We have to struggle with people around that. I mean, people struggle with me about that, like back in the day. We have to struggle with people very, like, sharply. We also have to bring forth that movement at the same time. Like, you know, when I was first being, like, recruited into the revolution, they arrested me just to tell me that they say, hey, Joe, last night we killed your homeboy. And they said, you know, when we turned the body over, we thought it was going to be you. And they were still pumped up. You know, they was literally jumping up and down and stuff. At the same time that, like, was happening and stuff, what happened, I got out of jail a couple of days, like, later, the police there in Richmond, California, where I joined the Panthers at, they were about to vamp on the office. It was approaching it, you know, with their assault rifles or whatever. It was one person, like, in there, this young woman and stuff. And, you know, the Panthers had this thing about, you know, executive order number 3 that Elders Cleaver had written and Huey Newton had signed about, you know, defending the office when the police, because the police, you know, kick in doors and, you know, and to terrorize and intimidate, like, people and stuff. So, you know, and this was part of, like, defending that and defending the revolution and stuff. And it was put to me, like, very, like, sharply, like, then. you know, what your life is going to be about. You know, you out here like in the streets, one, the police was trying to, you know, take me out in that way, and that's going to be some kind of prize. Like, boy, that's how they talked about it. And they took out my homeboy, and that was some kind of like prize. But also, right at that same time, somebody else was trying to like take me out because they hadn't heard I'd done some dirt like to them. So they was riding around to all the locations and spots that I've known to visit. And letting everybody, like, know that they were going to, you know, handle me or smoke me as soon as they saw me. And I was caught up, like, in that. In the past, and they put, the revolutionaries put it to me, like, very sharply and very starkly. What your life is going to be about out here and living and dying for that? Because I wasn't afraid to die. It's like people, that was a, these are forces for revolution. People have the potential to do something great with their lives and to contribute greatly to revolution, to the emancipation of humanity. See, a lot of these people around here, it's like I was. They're not afraid to die and stuff. But what they're dying for is the wrong damn thing. And we have to struggle with people that they can, you know, become part of this and make their life as well as their death count for something, contribute to something. It wasn't like, yeah, they killed like Fred. When they killed Fred, people became more people joined, stepped forward to join the revolutionary movement. People of different races and nationalities stepped forward, became revolutionary off of that and stuff. And again, like, we didn't have what we needed, and things didn't go all the way. It did not develop fully to the point where it was a revolutionary situation in society overall, with a whole, you know, revolutionary crisis, that's where you can really make a go at it and go all out and have the leadership. And that's what was lacking. We did not have the leadership at that time to take that, what had developed, all the way over the top to overthrow this system. And that's the point. We have that now. We do have that now. We have that with Bob Avakian and with the new communism that he has brought forth. We have a scientific approach to revolution. To make revolution, you got to be scientific and you got to be revolutionary. And this here is what we have. We've never had this here before. And so we have to be struggling like we said. So there's no reason. There's no like good reason for, you know, people just to be like dying for nothing, for the BS that they make us, that the system make people like do. There's a whole other way that the system, that society, and the world can be. And we got to go out there and struggle like with people like around there. Look, you know, they got people like in a situation where we think, and I used to think like that myself, man. The only way you can get some humanity, the only way you can feel like it's some, you get some humanity, is by degrading some other people, some other person who's just like you, or in a similar situation as you. That the more that you degrade them, the more that you can affirm your humanity. Well, what is that? That is just a reflection of what this whole system is about, this dog-eat-dog capitalist system is about. That's all that is, a reflection of that. And it's an indictment. But it's also it's a powerful like illustration of what's standing in the way for that not to happen. Not only like here, but anywhere in the world and stuff. For those kind of relations, for people to be caught and trapped in those relations. We see the same thing in any, you know, different parts around like the world and stuff like this here. Why? Because there isn't, hasn't been revolution. People need, and it's here. And people don't even know that it's here. People don't even know this new communism is here. People don't know that Bob Avakian is here. Enough people don't know this here. And so if they don't know, how can they take it up? And that's part of like what this national Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour is about. To go out there and let people know about that, but also to organize and to bring them into the revolution. So we can have the impact on society with the vision and the goals that I'm like talking about, but also with and bringing people forward in that kind, in the organization that is capable of leading that and getting trained in that to be leaders like themselves, leaders. And that's beginning to happen right now with new leaders are through this tour are getting trained and being to be core leaders and members of the revolution. But that needs to grow. And it needs to grow quickly. It needs to grow urgently. We are dealing with a rapidly ticking clock of fascism, of fascist America. It's moving like the consolidating people. And we have to drive out this Trump-Pence
regime. As part of revolution, that's going to open up new possibilities. But also, man, this is, you know, hey, if they able, like, to consolidate this fascism, they would like to, you know, to clamp down and bolt down the whole society, like, with this. Even the pretense of us even having any civil liberties, even the conversation that we carrying on, like, right now, forget about it, man. And so, you know, there's a real urgency and responsibility, like, there. But what's happening with those little kids along the border and stuff? And what they're doing, you know, stripping away the women with the right to even decide and choose if and when they want to have a child or not. Driving that out and becoming part of that in the streets with with thousands of people across this country, impacting the situation with that. We're not going to live. We refuse to accept, you know, a fascist America and shit, man. And then, you know, and what that opens up in terms of, you know, the lid being, like, taken off of our, you know, our sights and new possibilities, even creating even greater and more favorable circumstances and conditions for the revolution that I'm, like, talking about and stuff, man. Mm-hmm. So okay. This is, you know, this is what we're, you know, like, doing, like, out here. Look, man, they've already, you know, Trump just gave this speech, like, here. That was the other thing. He just gave a speech, and, you know, and barred it, and they spoke about it, like, doing, like, a surge throughout the inner cities as part of their fascist clampdown. You know, the surge, that's what they did in Iraq, and that's what they did in Afghanistan, a surge, military surge. And Trump, when he gave his speech here, he compared Chicago to Afghanistan and said Afghanistan is, you know, safer to walk down the streets than it is in Chicago and stuff. And they talked about, you know, that they already have in place the mechanisms or the instruments to carry out their surge that they talked about. And he mentioned that he had talked to cops here, or one cop here, and they say they can solve the gang problem in Chicago, like, overnight. So what are they talking about? What are these fascists, these white supremacists, when they talking about like that, what are they talking about? I don't know, your listeners might be familiar with what's happening in Kashmir, in India, like, right now. With Modi, that fascist, that Hindu fascist, and how just overnight they just clamped down. No internet service, no communications, military, police state, that the masses were thrown in just like that. It's the same thing that these fascist pigs are not only, like, talking about, but this is the direction that they're moving in, like, right now. You know, and this is what has to be, like, stopped by driving out this regime. Like, right now, with the Out Now movement, which we'll be joining in. We have been joining in with out there in the streets, like, with them, with that, because of the stakes that are involved. Not only just for, like, us, but the stakes that are involved for humanity if America goes full out fascist.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask Lucha a question now, before, and then we'll come back to you. But tell me this. You've been listening to everything that Joe's been saying. And I really wanted to ask you the same question. I mean, this question about we need a revolution, but people are settled into the system, and how are you going to break through on that? And the significance, I was really wondering about the significance, the importance of this core that you guys are actually trying to. I know in other cities where people have been, people are attempting to pull together cores of people that actually can understand things on a different level in terms of, one, can go out and struggle with people, but also are able to go out and bring this to people, what's going on in society. A lot of the stuff Joe was just talking about, but bringing this to people and bringing people forward to actually be part of these cores that actually can contribute to getting to where it needs to be.
There's people that are in the Revolution Club. Then there's a lot that we're fighting to bring forward, you know, out of the masses of people that we're going out to. And I mean, you know, we had a program yesterday that was a commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the murder of Fred Hampton. And, you know, where some different kinds of people came to this because they were drawn out of the fact that we were posing the question of, on this anniversary, what's worth living and dying for, you know, and the people that came together in that, that's part of the, we were actually even putting to people that were just brand new to this, the question of, look, here we face this dire situation in the world today and the need for revolution, and yet we have the problem of where people are at, what people are caught up in, the individualism, the me, you know, the ways in which people turn are turned inward and going against each other instead of fighting for emancipation and taking up the leadership that's been developed and the science that's been developed and, you know, and coming together as an organized force in this revolution. So we were putting that question to very new people to come in on working on, even while people are learning about the revolution themselves. You know, a lot of the people who were at that program yesterday, they were just finding out about Bhavavekya and they were just finding out about the movement for revolution. But there's a need to bring people in right from the beginning to working on this together, because there's really a basis to transform this situation, but there is a fight that we're carrying out. And, you know, this past week we've been out in different places, going out to different people, you know, so interacting with people we know, people that are supportive of the revolution, people that are on the fringes of it, but also people that we're just meeting. And, you know, and going and actually carrying out some of this struggle with people around what people are going to do right now with their lives and what is worth living and dying for. And, you know, Joe mentioned the points of attention for the revolution. These are points of attention. These are principles of what the Revolution Club lives by and fights for today. And anybody can actually take up these points of attention and start to work on how we get into a position where millions of people could be led in an all-out fight to overthrow this system. We're not in that situation right now, but the urgent need right now is to bring forward the leadership that's needed for this in a process where, as that leadership is getting developed, we're developing a revolutionary people. And we're bringing, and there's a dynamic that can get going and that needs to kind of take a big leap in what's already happening now, where you get a critical mass of people. You get people that start to take up, you know, the first point of our points of attention is we base ourselves on and strive to represent the highest interests of humanity, revolution and communism. We do not tolerate using the revolution for personal gain. You know, you get a critical mass of people coming out of places like the South Side of Chicago, or coming out of different, you know, places among oppressed masses, and then different kinds of people too, from different strata, students, different, you know, people from different backgrounds, but a force that's actually representing that. Again, we've got that in a beginning way right now, but I mean more of a critical mass of that. That's something that changes the terrain. That's something that's part of hastening revolution. That's something that then, you know, is something that becomes a real force where it can become a growing force, and more people are taking up that fight. And, you know, and then everybody's looking at what their options are and what their lives are about differently in relation to something that's actually representing a real way out of this. You know, and that's one of the things. I mean, just even in taking it out this week, you know, you run up against, you know, what Bhavavekyan calls the virulent individualism and the oblivious individualism. You know, the people who just straight up, you know, there's a woman who was on a corner that we were on the other day who was saying, "Why are you guys out here talking about people caring about other people? We should be caring about ourselves. That is what people should be doing." You know, and just laid out a whole argument. It is really virulent, you know, of like, it's not worth it to think about anybody else. You just got to think about how you're going to get ahead in all this, you know. And, you know, and there's other people that have posed things like that are not as directly celebratory of the individualism, but end up in the same place. There was somebody I talked to who said, you know, when I told a lot of people, a lot of the young people don't know about Fred Hampton at all. They don't know anything about him. And, you know, so I was talking to somebody about who he was. And she was like, "Oh, you know, that's really powerful." But then she goes, "Oh, but then look, they took him out." So what that tells us is really it's all about money, and we got to get ours within this. And it really is just people, you hear the system coming out of people's mouths. People don't have a scientific understanding of what has even gone on, you know, like why they're in the situation they're in, why they're thinking the way they're thinking, what has shaped their thinking. You know, there's a system that's responsible for this, you know, that has locked people in very oppressive conditions, pit people against each other in a system where everybody has to compete in order to survive just as a matter of functioning in this system, you know, and then people take up the thinking of, I got to get ahead in that. So people don't have a scientific understanding of it, and then the more that's what people are thinking about and how they're approaching the world, it gets in the way of people having any hope that things could be different, you know, because they don't even have a way to see through it. And so that's some of the struggle that we're having with people. What I said to the woman who was saying this thing about, this just shows that you shouldn't even fight to change anything, is actually the opposite is true. When you start to fight to put an end to oppression and, you know, there's defeats in the course of that, you have to advance off of that, not then say, "Oh, well, I guess then we should just accept all of this," especially not when there's work that's been done that shows how there's a way through. You know, and the other thing that teaches us about the murder of Fred Hampton is the need to defend and protect leadership when we have it. And we have, you know, incredible leadership right now that people have to, you know, in Bob Avakian, that people have to recognize and defend and protect, you know, as part of what it looks like to make revolution right now. You know, that's some of what's gone on. And people, part of my point about the virulent and the oblivious individualism, it is not all like people don't care about anything and, you know, literally just only all just want to do horrific things to each other just for the fun of it. Some people really get off into that. But a lot more people are just kind of more in a mode of like, I got to get my piece of this, not because I don't care about anybody else, but because this is what it, this is the only thing that's going to mean anything. This is the only way forward. And then, you know, and again, people having no hope of things to be anything different than that. So, but that, to me, I feel like there's a struggle both of like saying, look, there's actually another way things could be, but also people really have to confront, look, you're in something, what Joe was just describing about this, where this fascist stuff is going, what's happening already now, where it's going, like, the white supremacists, the fascist regime, they're ready to unleash a full-on police state genocidal path forward against black people, against immigrants, you know, against the, all these different sections of people. And the very people they're targeting are shooting each other. This has to get put in front of people, even directly, of like, is that, you know, is this what you are going to, you know, is going to give your life meaning? Is taking each other out, you know, being set up to do that on the terms of this system and letting all this keep going and contributing to it keeping going, or putting your life to something that really would count, which is ending this whole system and a fight to do that. And there's a way that we can fight to do that now. That's not some far off thing. You know, right now people can take up those points of attention. And the points of attention, you go through those 6 points of attention, you know, you're talking about a vision of a whole different world, like a really lofty fight. It's not just some pie-in-the-sky fight, but for real, like a world without borders, a world, you know, where all the chains are broken, you know, where women, men, and differently gendered people are equals and comrades, you know, a fight where we're basing ourselves on getting to the truth, you know, and not just, you know, whatever people say the truth is, but, you know, a scientific approach to things, you know, not for revenge, not just people, you know, carrying out all this violence amongst the people and all of this, you know, there's principles here that are in line with, there's really a different way the world can be. And this is really the only thing that's worth it, that's worth putting things on the line for. And sometimes we run into people who say, well, I couldn't go out there and go take on this system because, you know, I got to worry about, you know, the things I got to take care of my kids. I got to do this. I got to do that. But also people have a sense. You go out there and you start to go up against them, they're going to come after you. You know, and people will say that to us too. They're going to, I can't, they might kill me. Well, you might get killed tomorrow for nothing, you know, and what's worth it? Is it worth it just, you know, you can say you gave your life for was just trying to eke out an existence, or even worse, carrying out terrible things against other people? Or is it worth it to do everything you can and, yes, put things on the line, risk your freedom, risk your life in a fight that could actually end this and end this for humanity? And that's really, so that's the fight we're waging with people, you know, and that's the, you know, the core we're fighting to bring forward. You know, we have a little bit of a core, but even more, you know, strengthening that, bringing more people into that, and a dynamic where even brand new people who start to get challenged by that can come, you know, and contribute to working on solving those problems. And people who are hearing this radio show, whether they have this direct experience or not, you know, they should write into revcom.us, you know, they should write to us about what they think about this, you know, how they see this problem, how they see what's in the way of people breaking out of that individualism and thinking about the interests of humanity and fighting for that and getting with this revolution. Why are people so stuck in where they're stuck in? What's in the way of this? And then, you know, and then what ideas do people have about how to go to work on that? We actually need a lot more people contributing to that process as part of what it looks like to grow a revolutionary movement right now that's really working to transform the whole terrain and bring forward a force to get in a position as soon as possible for an all-out fight to completely tear the system down and be able to have a chance for a new society.
Mm-hmm. This is the Michael Slate Show, and I'm Michael Slate. I'd like to play another excerpt from a speech of Fred Hampton's, and I should mention that this excerpt and a lot more can be found in a documentary by Michael Gray, The Murder of Fred Hampton.
I want you to know that I want you to think. If you ever think about me, and if you think about me, niggas, and if you ain't gonna do no revolutionary act, forget about me. I don't want myself on your mind if you're not going to work for the people. like we always said, if you actually make a commitment at the age of 20 and you say, I don't want to make that commitment only because of the simple reason that I'm too young and say I want to live a little bit longer, what you did already. You have to understand that people have to pay the price of peace. If you dare to struggle, you dare to win. If you dare not to struggle, then goddamn it, you don't deserve to win. Let me say peace to you if you're willing to fight for it. Let me say it in the spirit of liberation. I've been gone for a little while. At least my body's been gone. You ain't got to repeat after me. At least my body's been gone for a little while. But I'm back now, and I believe that I'm back to stay. I believe that I'm going to do my job, and I believe that I was born not to die in a car wreck. I don't believe I'm going to die in a car wreck. I don't believe I'm going to die from slipping on a piece of ice. I don't believe I'm going to die because I got a bad heart. I don't believe I'm going to die because of lung cancer. I believe that I'm going to be able to die what I was in the thing that I was born for. I believe that I'm going to be able to die high off the people. I believe that I will be able to die as a revolutionary in the international revolutionary proletarian struggle. And I hope that each one of you will be able to die in the international proletarian revolutionary struggle, even in people living in it. And I think that struggle is going to come. Why don't you live for the people? Why don't you struggle for the people? Why don't you die for the people?
All right, we have just a couple of minutes left. And Joe, I wanted to let you have a chance to say something, if you have anything more you wanted to say.
Only thing I would say is to emphasize is that we have something that's very precious for, you know, for the masses of humanity, for the oppressed and exploited masses, something that we never had before. We have a scientific method and approach, a thoroughgoing scientific method and approach to making revolution. We have a leader and a leadership that we've never had before, and Barbara Bacon, who's brought forward that scientific method and approach that's thoroughgoing, and the need for people to, you know, to get with that, to get with that, to take that up, and, you know, and that's what we need, you know, and build this revolutionary movement with that at the core.
Mm-hmm.
That being the core leadership of this movement around that. And, you know, and with that, you know, that's, you know, that's a power that, you know, it's just a power that we never, like, had, like, before and stuff. And, you know, and there's, you know, there's potential for great things, like, to happen, like, with that, combining that with all the justified anger and hatred that people, like, have for what this system, like, does. So that now, you know, so what it does to human beings all around the world, you know, and combining that with, you know, with this, you know, scientific understanding about, you know, what's required and what's it take to get rid of it, then, you know, that's, you know, again, that's, you know, it's potential great power that can be, you know, and great things that can be, you know, potentially can be achieved, like, with that, combined with, you know, with the development of, you know, of what's going on in this society and what's going on in the world and the upheavals that, you know, potentially that this situation, like, holds and stuff. But, you know, without this out there and stuff, the people don't have nothing. But with this, we have, you know, exactly, like, what we, like, need. So people have to do their part to help, you know, this become much more impactful and powerful on the situation like today, you know.
All right. That's exactly the note we had to end on. And I want to thank you very much for joining us today, Joe.
All right. My pleasure.
Yeah, man. We'll be talking to you again soon. And Lucha?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Okay. Sure.
Thanks.
All right. Take care, guys. Bye.
I'll see you later.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Bye.
And that brings us to the end of yet another show. I want to thank all of my guests today, Lucha Bright and Joe Veal. I also want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, and my production assistant, Jeff Pryor. Also, both Joe and Lucha mentioned the Out Now movement. You can find out more at refusefascism.org. You can also find news and updates on the Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour and much more at revcom.us. All this information will be on my Facebook page. Now, we're going to go out with something a little bit different. There's a piece that Bob Avakian did about Fred Hampton's legacy. An excerpt from Ike to Mao and Beyond, My Journey from Mainstream America to Revolutionary Communist, a memoir by Bob Avakian. Fred Hampton's legacy. Fred Hampton was from Maywood, and he had led the Panthers in the Chicago area. I had followed very closely the whole outrage when he, along with Mark Clark, was murdered by the pigs in Chicago in December 1969. The newspapers and the authorities had put out this story that the Panthers were the aggressors, that they had fired on the police, and the police were only firing back in self-defense. But then the Panthers led tours of people through the apartment where Fred Hampton and Mark Clark were shot, showing that all the bullet holes were made by bullets coming from the outside in, and that what the police and the media claimed were bullet holes from the inside out were actually nail holes and things like that. I was very aware of, and I had tremendous respect for Fred Hampton, though I knew him, so to speak, more from the distance as compared to the relationship I had with the leaders of the Panthers like Bobby Seale, Huey Newton, and Eldridge Cleaver. When I got to Chicago, I discovered, not surprisingly, that all the comrades in the Revolutionary Union had been tremendously influenced and inspired by Fred Hampton, and of course, tremendously devastated by the way in which he was murdered. This was one of the strengths of the Revolutionary Union comrades in that area. Even though we had developed differences with the Panthers, the influence of Fred Hampton was a very positive one overall. He would openly proclaim that he was an all-the-way proletarian revolutionary. He would popularize that stance. By the time I moved to the Chicago area, it was several years after he had been murdered, and the Panther organization wasn't at the high point that it had been while he was alive, although there were still Panthers in that area, and there were some people who had been in the Panthers who either joined the Revolutionary Union or worked very closely with it. Of course, it wasn't just the Revolutionary Union comrades in that area, but many, many people throughout the country had been moved by Fred Hampton and had made a leap in a revolutionary commitment because of his influence. The whole way in which, before he was killed, he boldly put forward, "You can kill a revolutionary, but you can't kill the revolution." When the people saw how he was just shot down in cold blood by the police, this caused even more people to make the leap to becoming revolutionaries. This is a piece by Bob Avakian taken from his memoir, From Ike to Mao and Beyond, My Journey from Main Street America to Revolutionary Communist, a memoir by Bob Avakian. We're going to go out now with a little something special from Nina Simone, I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole round world to hear. I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart. Remove all the bars that keep us apart. I wish you could know what it means to be me. Then you'd see